From childhood, I have always loved nativity sets or manger scenes, just like this one over here. Every year, I would set the figures around the manger retelling the story of Jesus' birth. We had an angel that hooked up on the top of the roof. We had Joseph, Mary, and baby Jesus in the middle. On one side, you'd have the shepherds with maybe a sheep or two. And then on the other side, you had three men dressed in royal robes. Some had crowns on their heads, and they all had gifts in their hands, representing the wise men, and perhaps a camel, just like we have here on ours. Now, in recent years, such nativity sets have been critiqued as inaccurate. Scholars point out that the Magi, which is another word for wise men, did not arrive at the manger on the night of Jesus' birth, but rather, we see in Matthew 2:11, on coming to the house, they saw the child, as opposed to the baby in the manger. Could have been anywhere up to 2 years after his birth. I don't think it was that long for reasons we'll see in a little bit. But that had to do with the time frame in reference when King Herod had asked them when the star had first appeared. But at any rate, I'm including the visit of the wise men as part of this series, A Birth Like No Other. I am placing this text before Luke chapter 2, verses 21 through 38, which very well may have occurred chronologically before this. I'm sorry, but to me, the Christmas story is just not right without the wise men. And so we're going to take a look at them today. We'll kind of follow things up next week. And then we'll go back to Luke chapter 2 as we continue to investigate the life of Jesus here on earth. Matthew records in the second chapter of this gospel, the passage that was read earlier, of some distinguished guests who brought gifts to the Christ child. Traditionally, these visitors have been called the wise men. Or in the case of the Christmas carol we sang to open our service, we three kings of Orient are. Now, I like that hymn. I particularly like how they devote one verse of the hymn to the gold, one verse to the frankincense, and one to the myrrh. And then that last fifth verse kind of sums everything up. I really like the hymn. The problem is the title is probably wrong in three ways. They weren't kings. They weren't from the Orient, at least the way we think of Orient, and we don't even know that there were three. We do know there were three different gifts, but there may have been more than three. When we think of the Orient, what do we think of usually? China, Japan, Korea, what's now called the Far East. They didn't come from China or Japan. They came from what back then was known as Persia, Babylon, or perhaps another possibility is southern Saudi Arabia, still part of what we would call the Middle East. In fact, Persia today is known as Iran, and the ancient land of Babylon is known as Iraq. So that was the area in which they came. And they were not kings. They were magi. Now, what are magi? We think of magi and we often think of magicians. And while we get the word magic from magi, that's not what they were. They were not pulling rabbits out of a hat or making things disappear. They were really astronomers. They were the philosophers. They were the educated. And they were very highly esteemed. They were often the counselors to the kings. They were their close advisors. And oftentimes, they also held somewhat of a religious standing. They were up on the religions of the world. And here we see these very learned individuals that were very high in the social status of their day. They come to Jerusalem on a mission. They have come to find a newborn king. Now, how did they know that the king was born? They said, we saw his star in the east. And we often don't emphasize the word his there. It wasn't just any star. There was a particular star that caught their notion. And while it is true that the whole area of astrology began in Babylon, and they did put a lot of emphasis on what happened in the stars. By the way, this does not condone the use of astrology today. In fact, the Bible is very clear that astrology is not to be used. But in those days, the ancient Persians and Babylonians particularly, they were kind of caught up in astrology. And when they would see something unusual in the night sky, they thought that was significant. And they did see something unusual. We're not sure if it was a comet. That's a popular conjecture of what the Star of Bethlehem may have been. Astronomers had looked back, and they can pinpoint real close to what was probably the time Jesus was born, or right around that time. There was a triple conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars. They were very close together in the night sky in that part of the world. Perhaps that's what they saw. We're not sure. But they made an association with an Old Testament prophecy. Back in the book of Numbers, we find that there was a prophecy that a star would rise out of Judah and would lead the people. And I believe that they associated what they saw in the sky with that scripture from the book of Numbers and said, the promised king of the Jews has been born. And they wanted to go and pay homage to him. So these are the kind of men that we're talking about here. These were the intellectual. These were the learned. These were the guys with the PhDs, we would say today. These are the people that came from the right side of the tracks. These were the people that probably had wealth. As we're going to see, these gifts were very costly. And what a contrast that brings to the Christmas story. Think about last week we had talked about this. Everything leading up to now speaks of poverty, speaks of folks from the wrong side of the tracks, speaks of humble people. Joseph and Mary were both poor, as we're going to see in a few weeks. The shepherds were outcasts. Everything about Jesus' birth up to this point speaks of humility and even poverty. But now you have the most learned, the wealthiest, those of the highest social order coming and being a part of the birth of Jesus. And I think there's a real lesson to be learned there. Christianity is not only for the down and outers. Christianity is not only for those who are too poor or too uneducated or too unsophisticated to make it on their own. The wise men stand out as even people who seemingly have it all together still need a Savior. And today you might think, Christianity is okay for those poor, weak saps that can't make it on their own. But the truth is, Christianity is for the wisest, the wealthiest, the elite of society, not just those who are on the outside looking in. Karl Marx said that religion was the opiate of the masses. People talk about Christianity as taking a blind leap of faith into the dark for people who aren't smart enough to know things on their own. And that's not true at all. The Bible says in Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It's the starting point. And these wise men are a good example of that. Now, we're familiar with the royal gifts named in Matthew 2, verses 11 and 12. The gold, the frankincense, the myrrh. I mean, we've known about that since we were little kids in Sunday school, right? You have the plays, and the little guys come up with their gifts. Never did know what frankincense was. Sounded a lot like Frankenstein to me back then, so I thought that was pretty cool. We've heard this, but do we really know what the significance is? I think that one thing, it demonstrates what the wise men believed about Jesus. Or at least God prompted them to give these gifts to show us who and what Jesus was. The early church father, Epiphanius, wrote that they brought gold because he was king, they brought incense because he was God, and they brought myrrh because he was mortal. Gold, we know what that is. Incense in those days had usually a religious significance. They would burn different kinds of incense, and frankincense was a specific kind of incense. They would burn incense as part of their worship. Even the Israelites in the temple were to burn incense as part of the worship of God. That was an accepted part. In fact, you often read about how the sacrifices were a sweet-smelling aroma to God. And so incense was used in worship. And then finally, myrrh. What in the world is myrrh? First of all, who can spell it without looking at it? That's a rough word, isn't it? That's one of those things you find in a spelling bee. It stumps everybody. What is it? Myrrh was a spice that was used in those days to prepare a dead body for burial. Think of it as an embalming fluid. Now, it wasn't used like embalming fluid because they put it on the outside rather than putting it in the body. But can you imagine giving a gift, a Christmas present, you know, here's a bottle of embalming fluid. For one thing, you probably couldn't buy it, but could you imagine giving that? How about to a baby shower? You know, here's a mother and, you know, they're getting all kinds of gifts, baby clothes, you know, maybe some diapers and toys for the newborn. And here somebody gives, oh, here's a bottle of embalming fluid. Seems very inappropriate, right? And yet myrrh was very significant because it pointed to the fact that while Jesus came as a baby and was very much alive, he came on a mission, and that mission was to die. The whole reason why this baby was born was to die as a sacrifice for the sins, not just of the people of that day, but for all people of all time. We are told in John chapter 19 that when Jesus did die 30 some odd years later, that myrrh was used in the preparation of his body. Now, it wasn't the same myrrh. Okay, it wasn't the same batch that was given by the wise men, but that substance was used in preparing his body. Secondly, I believe these gifts symbolize the best that these men could offer. Gold speaks for itself. Even to this day, it is a very highly valued object. But most of us don't realize the value of frankincense and myrrh in those days. They only came from two places in the Roman world, Northern Africa and Southern Arabia. They were horribly expensive outside of those regions. And for that reason, I believe that the wise men came from Southern Arabia. We'll get to that in a little bit. But these were very expensive items in those days. The ancient land of Sheba was very well known for its gold, its incense, and its myrrh, as we're going to see in a little bit. So it's very possible that these men brought the choicest gifts that represent their homeland. It was the very best that money could buy in those days. Now, if that is true, if it is true that they came from the ancient land of Sheba, which is in southern Arabia, it's the very southern tip of Saudi Arabia today. If that is true, then they were also fulfilling Old Testament prophecies. Psalm 72, verses 10 through 15, speaks of tribute to be brought to the Messiah. The kings of Tarshish and of distant shores will bring tribute to him. Notice this. The kings of Sheba and Seba will present him gifts. All kings will bow down to him, and the nations will serve him. Long may he live. May gold from Sheba be given to him. May people ever pray for him and bless him all day long. So here you see the gold of Sheba was to be given to the promised king. In the Song of Solomon, there are three instances in which incense and myrrh are associated with the king. And the Jewish rabbis taught that this was messianic. This was talking about the coming promised Messiah. Song 3:6. Who is this coming up from the desert like a column of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and incense, made from the spices of the merchant? Song of Solomon 4:6. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of incense. And then in chapter 4, verse 14, it speaks of a number of different objects, saffron, calamus, cinnamon, and every kind of incense with myrrh and the finest spices. So in the Old Testament, incense and myrrh are put together an awful lot. Isaiah 60, verse 6 predicts, herds of camels will cover your land, young camels from Midian and Ephah, and all from Sheba will come, bearing gold and incense, and proclaiming the praise of the Lord. Now, this may not be conclusive as to where the wise men came from, but I find it very interesting that with these Old Testament references and the fact that only in southern Saudi Arabia and in northern Africa do you find these three items coming out of, I think it's very possible that the wise men came from that ancient land of Sheba. And when we get to our end of our message, you'll see how that can be even more significant, making that association. But it shows that these royal gifts were the very best that they could bring. They were the most expensive items of their day, and I personally believe it represented the homeland that they came from. It showed what they thought of Jesus. He was worthy of the very best. Now, we are impressed with the gifts themselves, but we shouldn't miss the importance of their reverent giving. Returning to the first two verses of Matthew, we read, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi came from the east to Jerusalem and asked, where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. Notice that last phrase. We have come to worship him. I know some have said that the Magi were actually ambassadors from distant nations, and they came on a political mission to establish good relations with Israel. And this was a way of getting in good with the king. But what do they say with their own mouths? We have come to worship him. And I want you to notice, Matthew states that the wise men saw the child and his mother, but it does not say that they worshipped them. It says that he worshipped him. Only Jesus is worthy of our worship. But that's why they came. And that's how they came. They came reverently to worship him. Now, this trip would have been quite intensive. Whether they came from Persia, Babylon, or Sheba, that's a long trip. We're talking well over 1,000 miles, upwards of 2,000 miles. And you couldn't hop on a plane or a train or a bus. You know what they came on, don't you? Camels. You know, every 7 days. You know what day it is? Yeah, those guys. Somebody got that, I'm glad. They came up by camel over the desert. It may have taken them 2 years just to get there. Now, we know that there was 2 years from the time the star appeared in the sky to the time they rolled into Jerusalem. Some have thought that if the star appeared when Jesus was born, then he would be 2 years old when the wise men arrived. I'm not so sure that's true. I think God could put the star in the sky in advance of Jesus' birth, giving them enough time to get there. Because I'm not so sure that Joseph and Mary hung around Bethlehem for 2 full years before they made their way back to Nazareth. So we don't know exactly the chronology there, but we know it was a long way. And we are told that when they saw the star, they immediately left. They didn't wait for a more convenient time. They didn't look outside and say, man, the weather doesn't look so good. Maybe we'll put this off till next week. They came immediately. It was that important to them. And I think there's even a lesson there to be learned for us. I realize you're all here, so I'm preaching to the choir. But how many people don't come to church because, oh, it's so early. I want to sleep in on Sunday morning. Oh, it's so inconvenient. How convenient was it to pack up camels and travel 1,700 or 2,000 miles to go worship a baby? But they did it. Because in their hearts and minds, he was worth it. The word worship comes from an old English term, worth-ship. And you know what it means? This is what I think somebody is worth. I want you to think about your worship, not just today. I mean on a consistent basis. What does your worship tell God he's worth to you? Do you worship God when you feel like it? Do you only pray when you get in trouble? Oh God, get me out of this one. Do we only thank God when things go our way? What does that tell us about what God is worth to us? How about in our giving? I'm not saying drop frankincense and myrrh in the offering plate when it goes by. But what do we drop in the offering plate when it goes by? Is it what we have in our pocket at the time because we didn't think about it in advance? Is it what I've got left over after everything else is paid? What is God worth to us? To the wise men, he's worth everything. He was worth the inconvenience. He was worth the expense. He was worth the humbling of themselves. Could you imagine these distinguished men getting on their knees before a baby? But it was worth it. Why? Because that's what God was worth to them. Now, this didn't go over well with King Herod. He didn't know anything about such a birth. He was upset. Why? Because he's king. And if a newborn king was born that he didn't know about, that's a threat to him. And as we're going to see next week, Herod wasn't all there to begin with. And he did suffer from paranoia. I mean, he thought his own sons were trying to kill him to take over. And he had a number of them put to death. So he was really upset about all this. And he calls in the experts on the Jewish side, the rabbis, the scribes. And he says, hey, this promised king, where is he supposed to be born? Immediately they popped up, Bethlehem in Judea, about 6 miles down the road. Quoted chapter and verse right out of Micah. Here it is. God predicted that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem. I want you to notice something. Have you ever thought about this? Those scribes and teachers of the law who knew the scriptures inside and out, they hear that the king has been born. They know where the king is born. You don't see them in any manger scenes, do you? The wise men traveled some 1,700 miles over the desert to come see Jesus, the king of the Jews, who was born. And those scribes and Pharisees wouldn't walk 6 miles to check it out for themselves. And those were the religious people. Those were some of the same people that would plot this baby's death 3.5 decades later. Just because someone's religious doesn't mean they worship God. But here, the wise men come. They find out that it's in Bethlehem. And notice what Herod says. He gets them together and says, okay, you're going to Bethlehem. You search for that child. And when you find him, you come back and tell me so that I can worship him too. Yeah. Worship as in skewer with a spear or a sword. That's what Herod wanted to do. The wise men didn't know that at the time. And so they left. And it says in verses 9 and 10, when they heard the king, they went on their way. And the star they had seen shone again. That star wasn't always there. They had seen it, got on their way, but the star left. Now it appears again. And this is no comet. This is no triple conjunction of planets, because we are told that the star moved and set right over the house where Jesus was. It was like a spotlight from heaven. God saying, okay, come this way. There it is. They followed the star once again. And I want you to notice what it says here. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. They were delighted. When they saw the end of their journey, when they were coming to the king, they responded with exceeding great joy. And out of that exceeding great joy came great generosity as they presented him their gifts. That phrase, joy, that exceeding joy, Leon Morris points out, Matthew's expression indicates that when they saw the star again, they were more than mildly pleased. Deliriously happy, maybe an overstatement, but it was something like that. They were thrilled. They jumped for joy. They reacted the way I will when the Steelers score a touchdown tonight. Right? They were excited. They were pumped. Yes, here it is. When's the last time we felt that way about going to church? Oh, man, it's Sunday. Yes. Come on. How many of us, the alarm goes off and we're like, good Lord, it's morning. Right? They were excited. They were going to see the king. I like what A.W. Pink writes. It's not the coming to receive from him. They came to render unto him. Their worship was a pouring out of their heart's adoration. You know, I've seen on posters and shirts and bumper stickers the phrase, wise men still seek him. And that's true of all who would seek the Lord. Deuteronomy 4:29 says, but if there you seek the Lord your God, you will find him if you look for him with all your heart and with all your soul. You see the same thing echoed in Jeremiah 29:13. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. The tragedy is some only seek Christ half-heartedly. They give up when they fail to see the immediate results. Some begin in the Christian life, but when they see the cost that's involved, they back away. I think the wise men teach us to seek the Lord diligently, to do so immediately and intensely, regardless of the cost. Now, I mentioned that I believe the wise men came from the ancient land of Sheba, to which most of you probably rolled your eyes and said, so what? Who cares? What difference does that make? But there's a story from the Old Testament that I think really reflects what happened when those wise men found Jesus, and it's the same thing that can happen to you today. Many of us have heard the story that when King Solomon was alive, living in Jerusalem, he was world famous. He was the Bill Gates of the ancient world. He was the wisest man around, and he was the wealthiest man around. So much so that the queen from the land of Sheba came to visit Solomon. She wanted to interview him. She wanted to ask him questions. She wanted to find out if this guy was really as smart as everybody said he was. Now, in those days, when you made a royal visit, you didn't come empty-handed. And we read about this in 2 Chronicles chapter 9. Verse 1 says, when the queen of Sheba heard of Solomon's fame, she came to Jerusalem to test him with hard questions. Arriving with a very great caravan with camels carrying spices, large quantity of gold. Doesn't it sound like gold, frankincense, and myrrh to you? and precious stones, she came to Solomon and talked with him about all that was on her mind. After visiting the king and discovering that all the good reports about him were true, verse 9 says, "Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold, large quantities of spices and precious stones." There had never been such spices as those the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. That tells me this is what came from her homeland. This is what they were proud of. And what came from Sheba? Frankincense and myrrh, among other things. Now, I know 120 talents of gold doesn't mean much. If we would put that into today's terms, 4.5 tons of gold. What's gold running for these days? $1,300 an ounce? Figure that into a pound, multiply that by 4.5 tons, 9,000 pounds of gold. And the gold of Sheba was the best there was. She brought a lot. These are exceptional gifts. But I want you to notice something. Verse 12. King Solomon gave the Queen of Sheba all she desired and asked for. He gave her more than she brought to him. She brought 9,000 pounds of gold, the finest of the spices and all those things that are made in her country. And what's verse 12 say? She left with more than she came with. The application is this. The wise men brought expensive gifts, but they left with more than they came with. Now, I'm not saying that baby Jesus gave them gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They didn't get the same type, but they got something even more valuable. See, some people fall into the trap of these TV preachers. Oh, if you give God $100, he'll give you $1,000. So I'm going to get more than I give. That's not the idea here. Those wise men met God, and it changed their lives forever. They worshiped the Son of God, and in him they found life. Abundant life here on earth, eternal life when this life is over. And that is the same opportunity you have today. Maybe you don't have the expensive gifts that the wise men did, but you have yourself. And if you give Christ your life, he will give it back to you 10 times as much. He will give you eternal life. He will give you life that is meaningful today. And while you could bring the baby Jesus the best you can offer, he will give you better if you will bow down and worship him. Acknowledge who he is. Not only is he king, not only was he a sacrifice, he is God. Let him be your Lord, and I guarantee you, your life will never be the same. You will go away receiving much more than you could ever give to him. So I ask you this morning, what will you bring for the king? He doesn't want your stuff. He wants your soul. He wants your worship. He wants your very life. Can he have it? We're going to conclude with hymn number 92. Hymn number 92 in your hymnal. I know this is talking about angels and shepherds, but it's verse 3 that we're going to sing. Sages, leave your contemplations. Brighter visions beam afar. Seek the great desire of nations. You have seen his natal star. But it's the chorus. that I want to be the invitation. Come and worship. Come and worship. Worship Christ, the newborn King. That's the greatest gift you can give. Will you give it this day? Let's stand together. We're just going to sing that one verse. If you honestly say, you know, I've been to church and I know the Christmas story, but I really don't know that I've ever done what you're talking about today. I've never given my life to Jesus Christ. You can do that before you walk out of this building. See me afterwards if you've got questions. This is something you want to do. This day could be the beginning of a new life for you. We're just going to sing the third verse, hymn number 92.